Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 230, coming at you on a Tuesday evening. Hope you all are enjoying the baseball action we got coming every single day now, which is great to see. We're going to get you it's a Bloom Board Tuesday, but we got a twofer today because Mr. Bloomfield was quite excited, I think, to get the season kicked off right. But first off, you can follow me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Yeah, not sure why I went with the double, but it's not like I have all the time in the world these days. But we're doing double Bloom Board Tuesday edition to ring in the return of baseball. I'm doing great, man. Nasty Nate Evaldi, Nate the Great, complete game Maddox. Shutout. A Maddox.
Yep.
99 pitch, complete game shutout. That made my day since I've got Evaldi on a ton of teams for obvious reasons. Bloom Board's legend. So that made my day. I'm doing well. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It's just it's that busy time of year. You know, real life, kids, and now we do this. So lots going on here between the show, the Patreon, and our other things we have to take care of for our fantasy goodness. So it's that time of the year. Love it. It's busy, but we love it. So I'm not complaining at all. And like you said before the show, and I was telling you, Ben and I said the same exact thing before we recorded on Monday. We have games on TV while we record. It's like, this is how it's supposed to be. So this is good.
It's my tradition. I don't like, whatever about the Dodgers, but they are like the one team that's on 7:10 PM local every night. And I appreciate them for that. But yeah, man, the routine definitely kicked back into high gear this past weekend. With your Fab article, we had a bunch of a wave of Patreon subscribers and look at like the weekly planner and reading your stuff. So it quickly became obvious that this is the new routine for the next 6 months, and it's gonna be good, man. It's gonna be real good
at what it's all about. We're already looking at standings and complaining about things, so that's always a plus. And it's been injury galore. Like I threw out an extra breakfast with Bubba this weekend because it was
weekend one.
Yeah, there's a slew of injuries that had a lot of fantasy Fab impacts. So I thought that was worth it. And there's even more. We're going to talk about those here in just a second. But it's the never ending cycle of, you know, we got the shoulders, we got the obliques, we got the torpedo bats, we got all kinds of cool stuff going on. Yankee set a home run record for the most home runs in the first four games of the season, which is ridiculous. It's wild times out there.
I can't believe this torpedo bat thing. I know I sound like an old, like, we'll find out like how important it is. Maybe it, you know, it might matter, whatever, but like, it's crazy the amount of like national press. Like I'm watching my local news in Portland, Oregon, like zero relationship to MLB. And there is a new segment about the Yankees and torpedo bats on Monday morning. And I'm like, what in the hell is happening? I'll take it. The more baseball coverage we get out there, it's good. But like, holy crap, that has taken off.
Yes, it has taken off in a huge way. And you know what? If it's legal, I don't care. Then go for it. It's like, I laughed. Someone actually compared it, or I saw a like meme or something that, you know, you and I are golf people. Golf has been doing this every moment they can. How can we alter the equipment to make it to the best of our abilities and keep it legal? NASCAR does it with their cars, if you want to get technical. Like, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, the old saying. And if these bats are legal, which they seem to be, that's fine. Like, I've never understood the full purpose, but then I was watching the A's game tonight and someone sent one to Dallas Braden, and he actually made it so simple to understand. Like, you take a little bit of the wood from here, a little bit of wood from here, because you want to focus it here, and boom, boom, you're done. And that's what makes it legal. I'm like, hey, that's the easiest non-physics related way to ever put that there. Like,
you didn't read the academic paper from my guy from Harvard or MIT, wherever the hell he's from.
That's adorable that you would think I would. That really is, because no, knows the answer, by the way.
Neither did I.
Yeah. I was like, it's like I say almost with every StatCast thing that comes out, and we're going to talk about bat speed here in a minute, that I usually just wait till someone else can point me in the direction of what I need to know before I get too worried about it. That's for sure.
Well, I don't even know if I can do that, but we'll see. We'll see when we get there.
Real quick, Sean says, where can you find Breakfast with Bubba on all your podcast platforms? Go check it out there. Usually, if I do record one, it drops at midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. Eastern at most of your locations. So go check that out as well. Yep. All right, let's get some news and notes before we get to the boards here. Some things that took place over the weekend and then just even today. Josh Lowe to the IL with a grade 2 oblique strain. It's at least 3 months in my mind from what we're seeing here because he had a grade 1 that took him for 2 months. This is going to be much longer, of course. So I call it a drop in all formats unless you have ILs. I don't know if you had anything to add to that. More importantly, when we talk FAB on Thursday night, we got Mangum and Wisner to talk about, and both are playing very well.
Both are playing quite well. I do agree on the Josh Lowe drop. If you don't have IL spots, it sounds very bad. This Cam Meisner, it was the opening day. I mean, he came in for Josh Lowe, hit a home run on opening day. He's hot right now, but he's 26 years old. AAA last year, 500 plate appearances, had a 29% K rate. So, like, not the best prospect pedigree either when I look up the scouting report over at Baseball HQ, which I look at for pretty much every new prospect that comes up. So I don't know if there's an actual, like, winner here. I don't know if you go in, and we'll talk FAB on Thursday, but I think you have probably already seen the best from Cameron Meisner. If you're bidding heavy FAB there, I think you'll be disappointed.
Yep, it's going to be Magnum PI for me is what I'll be looking at. But again, we'll get into that on Thursday.
Isn't it Mangum? Yeah, Mangum. Yeah, Jake Mangum.
It's Mangum. It's Mangum. I know. It's Magnum PI when we're talking about this, though. Trust me. Just if you can have the good doctor, we can go this direction. Speaking of which, the good doctor didn't get the save tonight. So.
Oh, man. It was, yeah. Bender. Bender gets the save for Miami. Not great. Not great. Yep. Whatever.
All right, Colton Cowser, he bent his finger completely back, sliding headfirst into first base to try to beat out an infield single. Went on the IL the next day with a fractured thumb, out 6 to 8 weeks. Our good doctor in the Discord said if he requires surgery, it's 10 to 12 weeks. We haven't heard anything on surgery just yet, so we might just be letting it heal. But 6 to 8 weeks, Ryan, that's a big blow if you're a Cowser manager.
Yep. Also a tough decision, I think, in terms of dropping. But if you have teams anywhere near the benches of mine and you have other injuries, decision you have to make because you can't really hold more than one or two injured guys. So tough break for Colton Cowser. What do you think of is it Heston Kjerstad time? Started against a lefty on Monday. That is a positive thing for Baltimore, who seemingly did not want to play Heston Kjerstad regularly last season.
Yeah, it seems like it's Kjerstad's time. Like, if it's not now, then why have they not traded him yet type situation? So it's Kjerstad. They called up Dylan Carlson. If Carlson plays over Kjerstad, and I'm an Orioles fan, I riot, essentially, is where that one goes. So Kjerstad should get all the run he can get for at least 2 months, it looks like. And by then, they should know who he is. Is he worth the guy they think he is or not? And that's actually, you don't want Cowser to get hurt, but it's probably the best case scenario for the Orioles. Like, as a trade deadline will approach shortly thereafter, what do we got? What do we do? It's the best thing for them. So, yes, it's Heston Kjerstad season in my mind. Again, we have a few more days to see how that shakes out, but we'll see. And I agree with Spore in the chat here. He says easy cut for in the NFBC for Cowser. Yeah, I'm with you. And 12s especially, 15s, you all get to keep one stash. If, like, you want to stash him until you have to stash your next guy, go for it. But I'm pretty much dropping Cowser as well.
Yep.
All righty, next bit of news here. We got Mad Max Scherzer to the IL. He left his start on Saturday with a lat injury. He said it was 100% due to his injured thumb, which has not been healthy since like 2023, which is perplexing. He actually had a cortisone shot on Tuesday in said thumb. So he's going to be shut down for a little while before it gets reevaluated. He said flat out after he left Saturday's game that he can't pitch again until that thumb's 100% because every injury he's had has been a result of overcompensating for the thumb. And the fact, when I heard that, Ryan, I'm like, at least 2 months, I'm thinking. Like, it's like a month of shutdown, essentially, in my mind, before he can ramp back up.
Yeah, it sucks because I think Scherzer, like, just tried to kind of power through it and obviously realized that he can't. The fact that the thumb has been lingering for so long is not a good sign, and the fact that even he admits it affects everything else, also not a great sign in compensating for that. So it's tough. I guess depending on what you think of Kumar Rocker and how he did Cincinnati in his first start of the season where he got destroyed. I mean, I guess you get more Kumar Rocker your life.
Wrong team, Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh shit, that's right. Jesus. See, it'll take a little bit of time. It'll take a little bit of time. Do they even have a fifth starter, Toronto?
They haven't named a replacement. Are they called up a reliever to add depth to the bullpen? The first choice people would think Yerio Rodriguez, but the manager flat out said we love having him in the back of the bullpen. I think it's Jake Bloss season. I think they call him up. He was traded in the Kikuchi deal last year. He almost made the rotation this year. I think it's Jake Bloss. I could be totally wrong though.
Whoever it is, it's going to be very matchup dependent in terms of like fantasy value, because they Toronto does not have much there. And I agree, Yerio Rodriguez, we've seen what he can't do and how far he can't pitch into games. So,
yep, not great at all. Jerickson Profar suspended 80 games for violating the league's substance ordinance. He was caught with a masking agent that players use after they are ending a PED cycle. So that's not good. Same one that Manny Ramirez got busted for. So he's out 80 games, dropped from me everywhere, and it makes a murky situation in the outfield till Ronald Acuna comes back.
Yeah, it does. It's Kelnick, Brian De La Cruz. I actually kind of like Brian De La Cruz, but he was terrible for Pittsburgh at the end of last season. So we'll see how that shakes out. Honestly, probably the biggest fantasy impact could be Michael Harris leading off, right?
Yep.
He's looked pretty good so far this season, had a very good end to last season. Obviously, Michael Harris is owned everywhere, but if Michael Harris can lead off, at least until Acuna is back, that will play. That will play. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I know you're done with Jared Kelnick. Kelnick's dead to you, so I won't even recommend trying to pick up Kelnick.
Well, the way I see this playing out is Cruz and Kelnick are going to get a ton of run right now. Alex Verdugo will be up shortly. I'm not saying that's the answer, but that's just reality. Is how that one's going to play out, because they signed him. He's in AAA to get ramped up for the season. That was the whole process. He'll be up shortly. They even traded for Stuart Fairchild about 3 hours before the PED announcement came out. Got that one going for you. Not saying that's a big concern, but the Reds used him. What'll happen is when Acuna comes back, then we're back to a platoon, and it could even mean Kelenic's gone if Verdugo takes over. That's what I'm saying. That's where I was referring to the murky situation we're about to get to here. But at least for like 3 weeks, it's probably De La Cruz and Kelnick getting most of the run, unless Verdugo screws it up. So I don't mind De La Cruz in deeper leagues if you want to go that direction, but otherwise pretty much out on this situation. Like you said, Michael Harris probably the biggest winner at this point in time.
See if Harris leads off against lefties. That'll be kind of be the next test. I don't think the Braves have faced a lefty in quite some time. So, or even
great to see Ozzie Albies get Albies up there. He crushes lefties.
That would make sense.
Yes.
That would make sense. Biggie.
More Braves news. Not good Braves news. Ronaldo Lopez to the IL with right shoulder inflammation. His velocity was down. He only had 3 whiffs in his debut. For those that might not remember, he spent 3 weeks on the IL in September with right shoulder inflammation. And then a little bit before the show here, the Braves announced that he'll have arthroscopic surgery later this week to see if there's anything more than just inflammation going on in the shoulder. Ryan, thoughts?
Not great. Not great. I mean, this was kind of, I don't know. I don't know if the writing was on the wall or not at the end of last season with Ronaldo Lopez, but had similar issues last year. So I know we were kind of talking before, but like Ronaldo was pretty much off our boards this draft season. We get the Bryce Elder experience. It looks like Elder looks like he's going to pitch at LA on
the Elder abused.
Yeah, I like plenty of old players on my teams, but I am not taking Elder.
Not tofu-y enough for you?
No. The bats can live off tofu against Bryce Elder.
Yes, Elder's done. The interesting is Hurston Waldrop looked good in AAA. Maybe he'll get an early call because they've been wanting to. They're wanting him later in the year potentially. And don't forget they have Jose Suarez, who they got in the Ian Anderson trade. So that's another guy they could use if they need to break glass for emergency. Gleyber Torres to the IL with an oblique injury for the Detroit Tigers. They say it's minimal. We'll see. It's an oblique injury. Justin Henry Molloy got called up. He led off on Monday, did not play on Tuesday. Torkelson's playing first base. By Cole Keith goes to second. To me, that's the biggest impact here, but anything else on this one?
No, that's it. It's probably best news indirectly for Torque because Torque has started, first base the last three games, basically since the injury.
Keeps hitting.
So that is great. Sucks for Glaber, even though it's minor. Like Glaber, I mean, he had a homer and a steal. At least
he heard it on his home run.
And he heard it. Yeah, that's right. He was like hobbling around the bases. Like, what are you doing?
Yes. Usually it's a swing and a miss that pulls the oblique, not an actual home run.
First, it's like, where did this beard come from? And then second, why are you hobbling around the bases? So,
yeah. It's pretty impressive stuff there.
Yeah.
Stop me if you've heard of this before. Josh Jung back to the IL. This time, at least, it's not for like a wrist injury. It's a neck spasms for Josh Jung. And they're saying it'll be the minimal stint. We'll see. Josh Smith has been playing third base. He's been banged up from time to time. It's a revolving door there right now. And eventually Josh Jung will come back, but it just feels like, when's he going to go on the IL again at this point? It sucks because the talent's great, but bro can't stay healthy.
Cannot. And it does suck. You want to see Josh Jung and see what he can do for an extended period, but not going to get that for now. For a while there, it was tough to be a Josh in Texas because Josh Smith was also hurt, but did start the last two games. This is kind of what we talked about with Josh H. Smith. Yes. Is he so versatile? Like, injuries are going to happen, and they already have with Texas. So, like, I mean, Josh Smith isn't, I don't think, even viable in 12 teamers unless you're desperate, more of like a 15 team streamer, but one who's already third base and shortstop eligible, and can at least hold water for you for a little while and do middle corner if you need it. So Josh Smith, I will actually probably have in some contingent bids this coming week. I mean, hit 258, 13 homers, 11 steals last year, almost 600 plate appearances. Nothing special, but he does a little bit of something everywhere.
15s only, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you can do 12s with Josh Smith. Yeah.
Okay. Just want to clarify that one real quick. This one hurt to hear on Tuesday. About a week ago, Sean Manaea was starting to begin his rehab and looked to be ready to go for the end of the month. That was awesome. Now we find out Sean Manaea has had a setback to his oblique injury. He had to have a PRP injection. He's going to be shut down from throwing for 2 weeks, which means mid-April, before he gets reevaluated to potentially start ramping up again. This seems like mid-May it just seems bad. Mid-May at best right now, probably early June. What are your thoughts on Manaea? Because I was stashing him, thinking I'd get him back like week 3 or 4 of April. I'm dropping him this weekend.
I think that's the move, because Manaea, I feel like in main events, was going 20th-ish round. Like, he was being picked as a stash because he had started throwing again, and like reports were decent, and now they're not. So yeah, I think Manaea is unfortunately a drop, and longer run for Griffin Canning. I mean, Tyler McGill is, I think, absolutely locked in the rotation, as long as he continues to pitch well and roll with Griffin Canning as you so choose, as someone who has been burned many times by Griffin Canning in the past. But he will have a spot, at least until Manaea is out, I think.
Yeah, Canning's going to be locked in. David Peterson, who had a bunch of strike, I think it was 9 Ks yesterday on Monday night, he will be locked in. It's a rotation that has a lot of injury concerns still, so.
Who comes back first, Montas or Sean Manaea?
It feels like Montas is ahead of the pack on this one, which is insane to think about if we had this conversation even a week ago. So,
yeah,
I got my money on Montas. Last bit of news here. You added it to the outline because it's a doozy. David Bednar to AAA.
Yep, not great. Bednar, I actually didn't pitch like terribly. Had some pretty bad defense behind him, but I think the writing on this was on the wall for quite a while with Bednar, who I think needed to drastically improve and show that 2024 was a fluke. And that obviously wasn't the case. So maybe Bednar gets right and, you know, comes back up in a little bit, but I don't even know who fills in. Like, Dennis Santana was the popular name kind of being floated around earlier today. And Dennis Santana actually pitched extremely well last season, especially in the second half. 1.32 ERA, sub-1 WHIP, 25% strikeout minus walk. Like, Dennis Santana has some upside, but then he came in the eighth inning today with the Pirates down 6. So that's kind of a buzzkill. And I don't really know if you want to be
Colin Holderman.
Yeah. I mean, do you like Holderman?
I liked him last year in DC's as a guy I thought would get the chance. He's already got two blown saves so far this year, so take that for however you wish. Yeah. If they use Dennis Santana where they used him, it feels like Holderman might get the first shot. But, yeah, it's not great.
We took a page out of Jeff Erickson's book in the forecaster for Holderman. Last sentence, given shaky control and flunking health, a name change to Saverman seems unlikely.
Who wrote that?
That would be Rod Truesdell back in October.
Oh, I thought it'd be Doug Dennis. That's had him written all over it to me. But
yeah. I don't know. Not thrilled with Holderman. I'd still like speculate on Santana. I picked him up, I think, in Werf last week. Maybe it was just like they wanted to get him some. I don't know. Just making things up at this point. But maybe they just needed to get him an inning and. The Pirates aren't going to be winning a game for a while. So I don't know. I still think Santana is at least on your list, but you've got a few more days before Fab to see what they do.
Yep. We'll see where it goes. They're going to be looking for some starting pitching help. Bubba Chandler would be a good call as the first two prospects have not fared well.
Harrington did not do much today. It didn't look good, but MLB debut. Yeah. You can't take too much away from that.
All right, it's Bloom Board time, and the more I think about it, we should call this the need for speed, because we're talking bat speed and pitch velocity on this show. So, Ryan, I will give you the floor as we double a two for Tuesday Bloom Board edition.
All right, so what we're looking at here is, and I will post this out on Twitter in the morning for the podcast crowd, bat speed. So bat speed, but with a twist this week. Dom Rello, who I will refer to him as Dom, his actual name and not his name in the Discord, even though he threatened legal action for not using his Discord name. If you're in the Discord, you will know why. Just kind of was thinking out loud earlier today. Like there was some talk in the Discord about bat speed, and he was like, well, I wonder if we just look at bat speed and like filter out the whiffs, because I don't really care how fast someone is swinging if he's not making contact. I was like, that's a pretty good idea. Let me see what I can do. And so that's what we're looking at here, is the biggest changers in bat speed on contact. So I filter out the whiffs from 2024 through 2025. And because I think bat speed is very much, you know, in a vacuum, almost useless. I coupled strikeout rate for this year on top of it, which again is we're four or five games into the season. Strikeout rate is extremely noisy right now, but I think it's at least a decent exercise to say, hey, who's swinging harder than they were last year and who's making contact while doing it. And that's what we're going to at least try and do with this board. Giant disclaimer. Again, we are four games into the season. Take everything we say tonight, I think, with a grain of salt. Take everything for these first two, 3 weeks with a grain of salt in terms of actually like analyzing skills of players. But bat speed is something that at least stabilizes very quickly, like 5 to 10 swings. People smarter than me tend to say. So I feel like it is one of those few metrics that we can actually kind of look at and say, oh, is he swinging harder? Is he making more contact? Like that is at least interesting to me. And so there's definitely some names on here that stood out to me, which we'll go through.
Dom in the chat says lawyers have been called off. So okay. Ryan had at least a good enough example to represent Dom in the room. And Dom did say he'd be tuning in to see how that went. So he man of his word as well.
That's how it went. We are a kids show. We want the women and children listeners to feel welcome here. And we will not say your name, Dom.
All right. This is an interesting way to look at it, because there will be some obvious names that stand out to an extent on some of these. And then other things, like people are saying, due to the torpedo bats, the way the physics are, you could swing the bat harder. So that could be a whole other column, or like a check yes or no box on that one. Again, more research needs to be done on that as well. But 20 of your points you made earlier, it's like when bat speed came out last year, it's like, okay, what do we do with it? We have nothing to reference it to. Like we have nothing. Right. So at least we have a small sample to reference to last season right now, and you can keep building on it. Because like the biggest thing we said, well, it could maybe tell us if someone's hurt. That'd be an angle to go with when you're looking at it. Like we have a Profar down there. We'll talk about. Maybe it's because of other factors involved there. But some definite things to potentially see here. So, like, we'll start with Benintendi at the top. Last year's bat speed was close to 68 miles per hour. This year it's almost 72 miles per hour. So it's about a four mile an hour jump for Benny Biceps. We saw the power increase last year. He's already got two home runs this year, I believe.
Yep.
So that's big. That's a big part. Because last year, like, the power increased, but the batting average went down. This year, the power is still there, but as you show, it's not striking out a lot. So, small sample, but pretty interesting to see with Benny Biceps.
Yeah, and I think it's particularly encouraging given, yeah, the drop in strikeout rate. So that green K rate, 13% K rate for Andrew Benintendi, swinging harder and striking out less. Again, who knows if that holds going forward. But it's at least, I think, a good sign that Benintendi, like, I don't think we're seeing this, like, late career breakout type of thing. But I think he could repeat what he did in 2024. I mean, where Benintendi powered up, hit 20 home runs, and still held an 18% strikeout rate. Just hit a ton of fly balls. That's why the batting average was so low. But I don't know. It is interesting that Benintendi is the highest riser in bat speed yet, and not totally selling out for it because he's not really striking out either. So, am I going out and trading for Benintendi? I mean, I'm not giving up much to do so. My outlook doesn't change too much on him, but it's an encouraging sign this early in the season.
Yeah, definitely is a plus. Like Spore mentions, he had a great second half. We talked about that in the Fab shows towards the end of last year. This is where it gets real interesting. I wonder what his first half or second half last year looked like compared to the start right. this year type deal. Yep. And that's a whole thing that I can't navigate baseball savant that well. So I just enjoy the bloom boards for what we have. I don't have much on Bryce Harper. He's got about a 3.5 mile an hour increase. The dude's Bryce Harper. He swings out as his rear end until he gets hurt and see where it goes from there, essentially.
Yeah, agreed. Oblique injury coming for Bryce Harper. No, I'm yes, kidding. No, Bryce. you don't take anything away from Bryce Harper at this point. We know who Bryce Harper is.
This one stands out to me, though. The 35-year-old George Springer had about a 72-mile-an-hour bat speed last year. It's up to over 75 miles an hour this year. He's not leading off. He's hitting sixth most games. He played in the outfield for the second time, I believe second or third time this season on Tuesday. He's been DHing otherwise. He's hitting 400 in a small sample, but he's also striking out almost 30% of the time mm-hmm. after three straight seasons below 20%, Ryan. So what are you seeing in a small, quick snippet with George Springer?
That's what I see is that red, that Anaheim Angel red, rare stake red for the strikeout rate for George Springer, basically 30% K rate. Is George Springer swinging harder, but just kind of going all out in what maybe his last year or two in the majors to try and get some power? I don't know. The early signs may say that is, this one's not as encouraging to me because it comes with a pretty big uptick in strikeouts again so far for George Springer. So this is not one where I'm like, oh crap, George Springer's going to go out and, you know, hit 30 bombs. Maybe he does, but it may come with a pretty brutal batting average if this different approach holds all season.
Yep. I agree. It's definitely not ideal with Springer here. And Father Time might be. As he gets older, now that he's swinging harder, I'm just blown away
right. with what's going on there. Yeah. Is that something that's sustainable? I don't know.
It feels like a hip's about to pop out type situation. Right. Junior Caminero, this is one that so I've seen on Twitter a lot because he's leading baseball in bat speed to start the season here. He's went up from 76.8 in 2024 to 80.2 to start the season here. He only has one extra base hit on the season. He's hitting close to 400 after Tuesday's games. So he's playing well. The strikeout rate's been outstanding this year for a young ball player. But and the other thing I'll say before I hand it off to you, one of the reasons there was a discussion on the Twitter was he is a torpedo user, and they're wondering if he's swinging harder because of the torpedo, but he also has a massive ground ball rate. So thoughts.
Yeah. And you know, I need to start familiarizing myself with who are the torpedo people, and it will probably be half the league in a couple of weeks. So who the hell knows, yes. But it is interesting. I read a good piece today. Michael Cecchini, who's one of our loyal listeners, he's in the Discord as well, put out on his Substack today. He did a little piece on the torpedo bat, kind of just focusing on the Yankees. But basically every Yankee that's using it has seen roughly 2 miles an hour gain in bat speed from 2024 to 2025, and just kind of the things I've seen and read, and that kind of jibes with what users of the Torpedo, can't believe I'm saying this, are doing. So great sign for Caminara. You said it's he's leading the majors in bat speed. That's crazy.
Yes, he's, that's what I saw all over Twitter, at least. Yes, he's okay. Leading baseball
and doing it with a 20% K rate so far. So like probably a good sign for Caminara. Now who knows if that holds, but that's a pretty like unique set of traits for someone who is obviously widely regarded as the best, one of the best prospects in the game.
But see, here's what I'm wondering, if the bat speed's a great idea, because he's swinging so hard but has a 72% ground ball rate right now to go with that bat speed. So that's interesting, because Jackson Merrill actually had an interview early on Tuesday saying he's not trying to swing as fast as he can. He's trying to like control his swing to get bat to ball. Went deep off a lefty on Tuesday, by the way. But he's using like the opposite angle of I don't need to swing out of my shoes. I'd rather make quality contact type situations. So lots of ways to hit a baseball, of course. PCA, Pete Crow PCA. Armstrong, goes from 70.2 miles an hour last year to 73.5 to start things out this season. And that is a that's a nice improvement for a guy that we were worried about power. I'll say that much, because like you said, with what Michael mentioned and other people have talked about, there is a correlation to bat speed, to barrel rates, to power. I guess been kind of broken down to an extent there. But to see the increase from the PCA, like, power was one of our concerns with him, Ryan. This could be something.
Could be. The problem with PCA is the plate approach looks just as shaky as it did last year, right? It's like a 16% swinging strike, which is bad. It's a 45% chase rate so far, which is bad. And surprisingly, PCA has not hit a barrel yet, despite the increase in bat speed. So again, 30 plate
appearances. Caminara didn't have a barrel either.
He doesn't have a barrel yet either. Cause yeah, ground balls can't be, can't be barrels by sheer definition. So, I don't know what to think of this PCA increase. It's nice that the K rate's down, but the plate approach looks just as bad, and he hasn't barreled it up quite yet, but obviously that could change. But, I don't know, maybe he's trying to feed into that late season power spike, and this is how he wants to do it. Could very well turn out well for him, but, you do wonder with the plate approach and swinging this hard. Hit 237 last year. Projections have PCA around 250. Like they're projecting quite a bit of improvement for batting average for PCA. I don't know if this approach holds up, if that's going to happen.
Yep, completely agree with you there. Vinny P has jumped from 71.2 to 74.4. He sat on Tuesday. He's in DHing because of his hamstring injury. Still hasn't played the field yet. He has that one home run on opening day. Hasn't done much since then. So I'm kind of interested to see, like, why did his bat speed go up if he doesn't even have a fully healthy hamstring? Seems kind of odd, but what do I know?
Yeah. I don't have much on this one. I like Vinny P quite a bit. Glad he's playing. Weird that, with a hammy, you'd be swinging harder. And I don't know. We'll see.
Bryce Terang swinging harder. Don't have a lot there unless you have anything on Bryce Terang. That could help, obviously.
Yeah, I actually do. So I wrote up Terang in the Speculator Wednesday. He already has two barrels. He's already hit the hardest ball of his career so far this season. Those are good signs, right? That can't be viewed as a bad thing. I will see if this holds up. We'll see with Terang. Like, what was his K rate last year? It was 17, and now it's up to 24. So it does look like he might be selling out a little bit. The swinging strike rate has doubled for Bryce Terang. So you wonder if, like, he's going to hit 250 if this approach sticks. But does have 109.8 mile an hour batted ball this season, and that is the highest of his career. So that is something that I'm at least, like, mildly interested in. Like, could Bryce Terang, if this approach sticks, could he hit 15 home runs with those tons of bags? It may come with a lower batting average, but I don't know. Maybe he's not the one trick pony that I shoehorned him in, at least through the first few days of the season here.
And Milwaukee moved Turang to leadoff on Tuesday as well, moved Churio to second. So that's a little interesting twist as well, if he can improve and get on base with more extra base hits potentially for Turang. Isak Paredes went from 68-2 to 71-1. Strikeout rate has dropped. He has not hit good at all to start the season. It's been pretty brutal for Mr. Paredes.
Yeah, I don't have much on him, to be honest. Well, hopefully the park continues or starts helping Isak Paredes.
Now, similar to your Turang takes, the Nolan Schanwell increase has me slightly interested here, because
he's your guy.
66.5. I don't have many shares this year though. 66.5 to 69.3 so far. And similar to Turang, we're seeing an increase in strikeout rate up to 23.5 after being 17 and 14.4. He's been a big contact guy, is what he thrives on. Doesn't have a home run this year, has a triple though, surprisingly, has a stolen base. But we're seeing a guy that he's selling out, it feels like, because he's swinging a little more out of the zone through this process. Still doesn't have a barrel, unfortunately, but has his best max EV. So a lot of things you mentioned with Turang, I'm seeing a little bit with Schanwell as well.
The exact same max EV, 109.8. So that must have been a ground ball, I guess, if he hasn't hit a barrel yet. But
yep, that would make sense.
I don't know, man. I feel like similar to like Turang, if Schanwell decides to power up, like I think it's going to come, even though he's hitting 294, it's 17 plate appearances. I don't know. I've never been much of a Schanwell guy.
Alejandro Kirk jumping from 69.9 to 72.7. We've been waiting for Kirk to showcase some power to go with the batting average, and maybe this is the ticket.
Maybe. What's the ground ball rate on Mr. Kirk? Because that's always the thing, is like if it's a huge ground ball rate, it's probably not going to mean much.
50%. It's bad still.
Yeah, and that's pretty much consistent with what Kirk has done throughout his career. So maybe this pretends to a little bit of a higher batting average if kind of the faster bat speed holds. You love to see it with a 12.5% K rate. Like that is pretty sweet for Alejandro Kirk. But I still don't see him as much more than like a batting average only guy, which in two catcher leagues is fine. That's not a big deal.
Yep, I'm with you there. Jordan Beck, this one makes me laugh. 71 miles per hour to 73.6. Dude has a near 88% ground ball rate right now, which is insane to think about. Like, I like Jordan Beck a lot. He's going to have to tweak a few things to get right on this one.
Yeah, honestly, the biggest thing I like with Jordan Beck so far is two steals.
Yes.
Already. I think that's probably the biggest thing, is Colorado is at least so far letting Jordan Beck run when the few times that he actually gets on base, since he's hitting 167. So I don't know. This does feel, and actually the couple of these next few guys, are we swinging out of our shoes? We're given a 30% K rate for a lot of these guys for an uptick in bat speed. And that's where I don't get as interested in, if someone's swinging harder, but it's at the expense of actual contact. So I don't know.
So many of these guys have no barrels. This is crazy. Beck doesn't. Miguel Vargas up here at 69.8 to 72.4 had a really good spring, was leading off for a while there for Chicago. I was kind of interested late in deeper league formats, but still no barrels. He has a 50% fly ball rate, still zero barrels with this kind of
increase. Vargas?
Yeah. Yeah, he's popping things up, essentially, is what that comes down to. This is a rough go for a guy. Like I said, had a big spring, but has not translated in season just yet.
Not yet. And, geez, I thought he was leading off. Is he not?
He was. He was early.
He hit fifth today. Yeah. Booted out of the leadoff role for Nick Maton.
Who went deep. He went deep.
God.
Russell torpedoed it.
I guess. Nick Maton is number zero, by the way, which is
a little. But is he Jeffrey Leonard, double zero? That's the question.
He is not. Dude, honestly, the White Sox lineup isn't like horrible right now.
It's no Miami Marlins, that's for sure.
No Miami. I know they talked about that on the RotoWire pod the other night, I think, but I think the Marlins lineup is like truly horrendous. The White Sox, with at least with Louis, with Lou Bob, with Vaughn and Benintendi, has a beat, but that's about it. Vargas himself, like, yeah, I I don't know. I hope it turns around for him. But yeah, you can't be striking out 30% of the time.
Here's one I like to see here. Slick Willie Castro.
Mascot.
70.3 to 72.9. He's already got a ding-dong this season while hitting close to 300 right now. So loving everything about this for Slick Willie. And I don't know, can't hurt, I guess, with him. Like he's got a 30% barrel rate and a 70% hard hit rate to start the season. He's actually doing some damage.
And not chasing and not whiffing. Career low again, 15 plate appearances, people, but career low 8% swing strike and a career best chase rate. So who knows with Slick Willie, but one of the highlights of the weekend was logging into Discord and seeing you type Slick Willie dong and just like, Jesus, what are we doing here, people?
Are you not entertained? Just the way I look at it.
Dodgers last one again, by the way, 7-0. Yeah,
Tanner Scott got the save,
trying and got the eighth. Yep.
I was watching that while we were here. So, Connor Wong, Bryson Stott. Anything here? Connor Wong's like a catcher too, if you're interested. I'm not overly thinking that one, but Bryson Stott could have some legs. He already hit a home run this season. To me, it's always is there playing time consistency with Bryson Stott, not so much the skill set of Bryson Stott.
Yeah, exactly. And we're starting. This is like the 14th and 15th top risers in bat speed on contact, and we're down to a 2-mile-an-hour increase, which isn't nothing, but it's also not major. So I don't have much on Wong or Bryson Stott.
All right. I'm going to have to step out for a few minutes.
Yeah, this is what the people tune in to see here. This is your reaction to the red crowd. So I will let you introduce our king on the fallers list.
First off, I'll take no slander about the king. He is on the list, though, and we treat everyone equally here. William Contreras, 74.2 mile per hour last season to 71.8. It's about almost two and a half mile an hour drop off for the king, and the strikeout rate has ballooned. Ground ball rate's pretty much in line. He's got a barrel. His hard hit rate stinks right now. It's a small sample, as Ryan keeps telling me, so I'm not overly concerned with it, but the whole Brewers team sucked. So before tonight's like 5-run outing, they've been horrible. So I'll just kind of sit back and wait for King William to do his thing,
which is really all you can do, right? Like if you drafted William Contreras, you're not doing anything about it. You're just riding this out. So I'd like to think that this is nothing. This is just small sample. It probably is. The only thing with a sharp decrease in bat speed like this is it could be some type of sign of underlying I word.
Nope, we're not doing this right now.
All right, underlying ailment, we'll say. I don't know if that's the case with Contreras. You never know with catchers, you get dinged up or whatever, but it's certainly not a good thing to see a drop in bat speed and a spike in K rate. But again, it's four games. I'm not worried yet. And even if I was worried, again, what can you do about it? I guess if you're in a trading league, but I would not even think about trading King William at this point. You want to give him some time. Give him some time and let's see how this shakes out.
Your boy Miguel Andujar, 71.2.
We have Dr. Dave in the chat says he knows the I word.
We know, Dave. We know. Well aware. You know. Miguel Andujar, 71.2 miles per hour, 68.7. But K rate's down. He's hitting for a good average. I watched the last two nights of Oakland A's games and just got a slow and steady swing, but I don't know if there'll be a ton of power behind him, but he's probably going to hit for average. Maybe it's just like I said with Jackson Merrill, it could be a conscious decision on his part to worry more about contact than power.
I was going to say, man, he's over there in Sacramento now. He figures he doesn't need to swing hard to get it out of that stadium, so why not just focus on some contact and do that? I'm not worried about Miguel Andujar. I did talk him up as a streamer this week because I think the A's have like six right-handed pitchers they're facing, but I don't know. At least he's making contact, so that's a good thing.
Jacob Amaya, I have nothing on him.
Is he are we related to Miguel Amaya?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I believe he's playing shortstop for the Chicago White Sox.
Yes, that I do know, but yes. I'm just curious. Figured you might know these things. I don't know.
I've not seen any relations to the great catcher. Not the catcher they hit for the cycle, though. Different catcher for the Cubs. But, yes, Miguel Amaya. No, I don't believe so. But I could be wrong. Jerks and Profar, the one a lot of people wanted to see here. Goes from 71.4 mile per hour last year in that breakout season to 68.7 to start out before he was suspended for his PED situation. Yeah, that's kind of interesting to me. Dom was talking about a wrist injury towards the end of last spring, or towards the end of this spring, that could have affected the bat speed. That
I forgot about that, but he's right. Yep.
There's an underlying injury type situation we're talking about. Regardless, who cares? We're not going to see him for 80 games.
Agreed. I hate to be cutthroat here, but we don't really care anymore because
are not important at the moment.
He got paid. He got paid. Good for him.
He doesn't get paid during the suspension.
That's true. That's true.
80 games, half his yearly salary gone.
That's true. That's a valid correction there.
Yep. And then Colt Keith, Keith Colt, depends on how you want to look about it here. This has not been a great start. His K rate's up to almost 30% right now. His swinging as miles per hour dropped 3.6 miles per hour from 79 to 67.3. What are we thinking on Colt Keith?
I mean, so like this is, I mean, this is a pretty big drop. I mean, 3.5 miles an hour. I mean, that's a pretty big drop in bat speed. And then you pair it with the elevated K rate. And I think most importantly, because again, this is tiny sample. I know you've heard that a million times already, but if this continues to go downhill and Gleyber Torres comes back, I don't see how Detroit starts Colt Keith over Spencer Torkelson, assuming Torkelson keeps, you know, kind of doing his thing. So I am worried if I have Colt Keith. You've got some time for this to turn around, but I feel like this is now somewhat in audition mode while Glaber's out, because once Glaber's back, Detroit's going to have a decision to make there. And I mean, I guess they could just move Torque back to DH, but I don't know. I'm worried if I have Colt Keith. That's a big drop in bat speed, and it's not like he's just making contact to compensate for it. He's striking out a ton too.
Yep, I'd be quite concerned on that one. Ground ball rate's actually down from last season, 8% in the small sample. He's popping the infield flies up, and yes, Michael Cecchini nailed it with that one.
He's the country music star, Colt Keith. I forgot that nickname we gave him.
Yes, Keith Colt, Colt Keith. Yes.
Who's the guy? Who's the pitcher with like Patrick Ryan, Chad Patrick?
Chad Patrick for the Milwaukee Brewers actually had a great debut.
That's classic.
On Tuesday, Chad Patrick. Yes. These two first name players, you got to be careful what we're dealing with here. They could be up to no good. Any other thoughts on the bat speed small samples?
Who are you most like encouraged by with these that we just talked about?
Most encouraged, besides Slick Willie, obviously. I kind of agree with your terrain take. I think it's like terrain or Sean Wall.
That's what I was thinking. Terrain.
Like it's a combination of, we've seen that the increased bat speed can only help guys with limited power to begin with. And I don't mind a little more strikeouts. We talk about guys just need to be more aggressive once in a while too. So that could be a good thing. Like not striking out a lot isn't always the best thing, as weird as that might sound. Like aggressiveness is important.
Yep. Agreed. And still, like, I'm still relatively down on Bryce Terang, not that it matters anymore because we're not drafting anymore, but this is obviously it's Bryce Terang is young enough where like this type of thing could actually happen. So I would agree. Out of like the disclaimer that I gave when we introduced this board, I think Terang is probably the one where I'm like, huh, that's most interesting.
And to reiterate before we move on to the pitching side of things here, these are on swings that resulted in contact. So correct. Definitely, like, these are balls most likely that were put in play, so that bat speed had an impact on what took place. One would hope, at least, is the point of this conversation.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk pitchers. Let's keep our need for speed and head to the mound on this one, because it's only one start, but we talk about, like I said, with the Ronaldo stuff we discussed earlier, the drop in velo, no whiffs, very concerning. And we talked about it, like Alcantara and Senga were down tonight. We'll see where that goes, but what do you got for us when we're looking at this blue board?
So this is just, again, I think if you're going to look at one start of a pitcher, you probably shouldn't even be doing that anyway. I like to look at what was pitch mix, but even pitch mix is so like dependent on the lineup you're facing. If it's lefty centric, if it's righty centric, I still want at least a few starts for a pitch mix. If I'm looking at like just one number that's going to stabilize for at least a start, it's fastball velocity. It's velocity. So I just thought, you know, for our first show of the year, in season show, we could at least look at, we don't need to talk about every single one of these guys, but like look at, really look at the faders. Those are the ones who I may be the most concerned about. And like, I don't know, for the velocity risers, I keep changing my tune on this. Like, I think both things can be true, that A, someone throwing harder is a good thing because they are better. Like, if you have the same stuff, but you start throwing a harder fastball, you almost by definition, and like movement, command, that sort of thing, sure, your stuff just plays up better if you're throwing harder. I think that's probably widely accepted. However, do you want these guys throwing? Do you want, for example, Jordan Hicks throwing 98.7 miles an hour? Do you want Hunter Green increasing from 97.6 up to 99.2? No. Like, is that sustainable over a full season? So I feel like the fastball velocity risers, it's a little bit more nuanced of a conversation, a bit of a double-edged sword for some of these guys.
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight a couple, like with the Jordan Hicks thing, the jump back up to 98.7. They interviewed him, and there's some stuff after his start on Monday, and I didn't like hearing this. I don't want to see him at this velocity. But they said last year, we talked about it on the show last year, like he was lowered his velocity, so he go deeper into games. Well, then he was like, well, that didn't work out so well. I still kind of ran into it. So he said he went back to throwing every inning like he did when he was in the bullpen.
Oh, shit.
That's like, that's the Cliff Notes version
of live life like you're dying, right? That's
I just heard that. I'm just like, wow, okay. Hunter Hayden Birdsong, stay loose, kid. Is kind of how I read that writing on the wall on that situation. So just keep that in mind when with the Hicks thing, because honestly, it might make him better for now as you roster him like I did last year, and then you drop him when you appropriately need to drop him. Just be ready for that. But he might get you more strikeouts because the strikeouts are kind of up and down throughout the entire go early. He might be a K per nine guy again at this rate, but just know the per rate might not last as long type situation with Hicks. I just wanted to highlight that when he was at the top of this board, is very interesting wording coming out of that start on Monday.
Yeah. I did not hear that. So that's pretty good insight there. And I don't think very positive of a takeaway that
Like you said, I don't know if I want to see. Yeah, I did not want to hear that. That was not, because I know I didn't like watch the velo closely, but just watching the start, I'm like, hey, he looks nasty right now. Like, this looks like a different dude from last season. That's why.
There are a few. Go ahead.
I was going to say, anybody else who stood out to you on the left side, because we'll hit the whole right side, but if you wanted to highlight anybody else on the gainer side of it.
The ones I struggle with on the gainer side are the guys with previous arm issues, like Jesus Luzardo. I don't know if Jesus Luzardo can go all year throwing 97. Max Meyer, granted, he's went from 94.1 to 95.6. Like, that's a jump, but it's not, you know, crazy, crazy velocity. But Max Meyer has a long history of injuries and that sort of thing too. So those are the ones where I'm like, I don't know. Granted, this is also first start of the season for these guys. They're probably amped up. How many of these guys started on opening day? It was an opening day start, but there is that to at least consider. One interesting guy, I think Hunter Brown, I think is worth at least bringing. Like, so like Matthew Boyd's another guy, just gets hurt all the time, but it's also like, I mean, so Matthew Boyd's up from 92 to 93.3. My thing with Matthew Boyd has always been, I think he's going to get hurt. You can't depend on him for a full season anyway. So might as well kind of gas it and get your 3 months out of Matthew Boyd. And I think you're okay there. Hunter Brown and Kevin Gausman, to me, are the two, I think, most interesting ones, mostly because for Hunter Brown, he has been a very stable, reliable starting pitcher in terms of innings pitched. It was 155 innings in 2023. It was 170 innings last season. It was 126 in the minors in 2022. Like, Hunter Brown has been pretty healthy throughout his career. And so I also trust Houston as an organization. Like, I don't know if this is like the worst thing for Hunter Brown. Granted, it's an uptick in fastball velocity to 97.8, which that is also hard to keep up for a full season. So I don't know if it's anything there, but that's at least interesting to me, is Hunter Brown going up to almost 98.
Yep, that stood out a lot. Gossman's increase, because we saw the big spring he had. Didn't have good usage of the splitter, it felt like, just watching it and not looking at the stats on his debut, but to see the velo up on the fastball, because he still managed to get through his start rather unscathed, like didn't get destroyed. So that could be a plus going forward.
Right. And the other thing with Gossman, the other thing with Gossman, this is technically an increase over last year, but it's really just him going back to normal. Yes. Right. 100%. Which I think is like also a good thing. This isn't like someone who is in uncharted territory, who's never thrown this hard before. This could actually be just like 2024 was, he had those early shoulder problems, and you know, I don't know if he's over it or whatever, but this is more Gossman just going back to the 95 mile an hour guy that he was before 2024.
Yep, totally agree there. And the last one I'll say is Reese Olson jumping up to 95.3. He had that big start last year, then got hurt, missed most of the season. People were pumped on him through spring and in draft season to see that velo up. Not sure it's what I wanted to see per se, because I thought he was pretty good, but to see the jump is also a positive for the health department for now. All right, the fallers. Ironically, Hunter Brown is second riser, and Mitch Keller is the first faller.
That's right.
Looking at you, Jesus. Ben Tidd.
Ben Tidd's Keller Hunter Brown comp.
God. Yeah, it's gonna catch some strays on this one, my friend. But Mitch Keller, maybe he's hurt. He's getting old. Like he still grinded through his start. Like he did what Mitch Keller always does. Like him and even Michael Wacha coming up here, I'm not really reading too much into either one of them.
Same. I just think both of those guys are so like steady Eddie. Not the highest ceiling, whatever, but I think there isn't
much. They're pitchers, not throwers. That's just the way I look at it. Like if they don't have their good stuff, they'll still pitch through it type thing.
Exactly.
And again, all these could signify an injury. I doubt they are, but with those two, I think they're just pitching.
Another thing you need to at least consider is some of these early season starts are in cold ass weather, and it's just like that can affect velocity too. Now, like Mitch Keller going from 94 to 93, I'm not that worried. If Mitch Keller is down to like 91, 92, that fastball is extremely hittable, and then we're in trouble. But no, I'm not reading too much into Keller at this point.
Miles Mikolas, he's washed, so that doesn't surprise me at all to see that drop off. Like, dude needs to hang it up, and I know Matt Thompson would fully support that. He wants him DFA'd so fast so he can get the prospects up. He is not happy that Miles Mikolas is in the way right now.
Okay.
Ben Brown's drop off again, super small sample last year because most of his time was spent either injured or in AAA. But going 96.4 to 95.1, I watched that start last night from start to finish. Actually, looked like he was getting a little better as the start went on. Maybe he was ramped up early and then kind of settled in. It was the A's. It was that bandbox of a ballpark. So take whatever grains of salt you wish there, but I'm not super concerned at this point in time.
Okay. And I did not watch Ben Brown start. So I'll take your word for it there. If you're not concerned, we're still really like the thing with Ben Brown, like the fastball was, arguably probably his worst pitch. Curveball was elite last year, and change up pretty good too, both in whiffs and ground balls. So Ben Brown is one of those guys where like if the fastball was just a little bit better, I think there's mega breakout potential. So we don't like to see a full drop in mile an hour and fastball velo, but I don't know. Also not that worried yet.
Yeah, we got Bailey Ober with his yearly opening start.
Dude,
disaster. And down to 90.3, man, that's like he's starting to get to that territory that anybody's going to hit him type things. So that's not ideal.
Not ideal. Certainly what wasn't ideal was the 8 earned runs. I think last year it was his first start. It was 7. So we're not trending into the right territory. The big thing with Bailey Ober is he was sick.
Yes, which is ridiculous. I'm sick and tired of these people not saying anything. Like, good.
Yeah. God. Like he was not feeling well. I think the report was, he was throwing up all day on Friday. I think the start was Sunday and was not like Ryan Jeffers, the catcher,
not
was
close to 100%.
Yeah, was like just not there. So it's like, okay, that's probably good for the long term prognosis of Bailey Ober in 2025. Like, I'm disregarding this start, but damn, that start hurt. Like, why couldn't you just be like Tanner Bibee and just push it a couple days? Like, God, to use a lack of words, sickening to see.
Well done, my friend. These next two guys through batting practice, now that justifies the 90.6 and 90.5 velocities from Nestor Cortes and Joey Estes. Both of them were just like, as most say, including Dr. Dave, that Cortes will have Tommy John sometime this year. And Joey Estes, I don't think, is long for this rotation, as he barely beat out Mitch Spence for this spot. I don't see him getting too many more opportunities, given Mitch Spence came in after him and didn't fare much better.
Right, and I don't know. I'm very concerned about Nestor Cortes. Feeling very good about my beer bet against Nestor Cortes.
Yep.
But Nestor Cortes, even if, you know, it's 90.6, like that's not good for fastball velo for Nestor. So you want to see that come back up. But just the way Nestor ended last season with the elbow, very, very worried about Nestor Cortes. Joey Estes, I'm not really worried about him fantasy wise, because
not really thinking about him, honestly.
Not really thinking about him, to be honest. Sorry to Joey and his family, but yeah, this is probably the first time I've thought of Joey Estes since I was probably fabbing him, streaming him last year, yes, and failing at doing so.
Drew Rasmussen going from 97.4 to 95.5. Honestly, like, and Dave pointed out, 97.4 is probably his bullpen velo last year, yep. So that's a big part as well. And he looked great in that start. It's one of those, it's kind of how we felt about Jordan Hicks last year. I like seeing that drop in velocity to 95.5. Let him get nasty. Let him throw his 5 to 6 innings. He'll do that a lot more often if he's throwing 95.5 instead of 97.4.
Yeah, I attribute this to, I mean, Rasmussen was only going an inning or two in 2024. So he kind of gassed it up. Did throw, well, in 2022, Rasmussen only averaged, well, yeah, he averaged 95.5. My bad. What am I talking about? He averaged 95.5 as a starter in 2022, and Rasmussen went 146 innings in a really good season. So I'm actually encouraged by this drop, 2 mile an hour drop in velocity for Drew Rasmussen. I think this is by design now that he is a starting pitcher, and you can still be very effective living 95.5. So this is actually one of the fastball quote-unquote droppers that not only am I like not worried about, I'm actually kind of encouraged with, if that makes sense.
I completely agree with you. Walker Buehler goes from 95 to 93, dude, and I am concerned with this. Like, most of these was like, whatever, this, that. He didn't look good at all. He looked very hittable, and that velo drop just stands out after a guy that has gone through so many arm injuries.
Yes, full agree. I mean, Buehler was living 96 back when he was Walker Buehler. And I am scared to see what a 93 mile an hour Walker Buehler looks like over a full season. He was pretty bad last year. And if you're that bad and losing two ticks on your fastball with, like you said, the injury history of Buehler, it's not great. Again, just one start. Who knows? Could rebound next time out, 95. And I still think at 95, I don't know if Walker Buehler is that great. But this is very, very concerning to me. Walker Buehler dropping velocity.
Yep, agreed. And then similar to Drew Rasmussen, seeing Jose Soriano go from 98.8 to 96.6, I absolutely love. He was racking up the strikeouts. This is another guy, was a late kind of, I wouldn't say helium is the right word, but getting talked a lot more about late in draft season. He was a guy that I rostered at times last year because I do like the strikeout upside. It's just a matter of putting it all together with him. He looked really good in one start. I get it, but definitely the velocity doesn't concern me as much with Soriano.
Agreed. And pitched quite well. So yeah, not worried. If you get out of that 98, like, I think that's a good thing for the season. So it was the White Sox. It was 7 innings.
Hey, White Sox are playing good ball right now. Don't knock it
completely. I did just kind of fluff them up a little bit, but yeah, I'm not worried about Jose Soriano living 96, 97. That's probably where he should go.
100%. Any other thoughts on this board? As for the most part, we're like, okay, things are good, but there were definitely a couple that stand out as goods and more on the good side of things. Let's put that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, I'm most encouraged with Kevin Gausman and Reese Olson, to what you were saying about Olson, Bubba. Most discouraged about Nestor Cortes and Walker Buehler. And the one I'm ignoring is Bailey Ober, his drop. Because I have a lot of Bailey Ober. But B, I just think he wasn't physically healthy that day, and he will hopefully turn things around. So I think Bailey Ober's pretty good.
Yeah, I think he's pretty darn good as well. I am curious to see what, like, the Hunter Browns, Lizardos do on their next start. per se? Like, was this an amped up because Lizardo coming back from injury, new team? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious to see where they settle in, because I like Lizardo a lot. Should he be living in the 97 world? I don't know.
So, that's playing with fire, given his
past. That's my concern. Like, I want to see maybe if he gets back down a little bit in the next start, we can work with that type situation. See where it goes. All right, let's hit up a couple listener questions here before we head out. We had one in the chat here. Frank, he was offered Willy Adames for Cody Bellinger, currently using Willy Castro at shortstop, and I have Tristan Casas and Yandy Diaz. If it's a standard format, I probably stick with what you have.
Probably would, too. I'd probably hold Adames because it looks like he's weaker at shortstop than he is at first.
Agreed. All right, some questions from the old Discord here. Lucas Bury says, what types of information has you moving off your priors? Thanks, boys. Like, guys, we liked winning the season.
I mean, at this point, honestly, nothing. Probably nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I just like to wait. Only thing that I would be concerned about is, like, a loss of playing time. But, like, skills, you got to give it a few weeks to look at, so.
Yeah, playing time, batting order could change my thoughts on things, but I'm not really dropping anybody I like just yet type situation.
Yep.
Like Dylan Cruz has Mike Kirlin ready to find the edge of a bridge, but that's about it. Brendan says...
That's not Dylan Cruz's problem.
That's
Kirlin's problem.
Brendan says, does this make you think William Contreras is hurt? No. Go for it, Ryan.
I won't be as 100%. Certain as you are, but I am leaning towards the let's see this play out with William Contreras. Yeah, I don't think he's hurt yet.
Aaron Gift says Sean Murphy's coming back sooner than I expected. Yeah, he started rehab on Tuesday, went deep already. They said he might need about a week to get ramped up. Do we think Drake Baldwin sticks on the roster and is still rosterable as a catcher too when Murphy returns? I'll let you have the floor first, but I have my thoughts.
Yeah, you give us your thoughts. How do you know that Sean Murphy homered today in his rehab? Like, you're crazy, man.
I was already prepping for my breakfast with Bubba after the show.
I can't even get Max Scherzer's team right, and you've got Sean Murphy's rehab stats just off the top.
He's catcher. Catchers matter, Ryan. Drake Baldwin, I would imagine they send him down to get regular at-bats at AAA. I doubt they leave him as a backup catcher to Sean Murphy. Unless they guarantee it to be a 50-50 role. And if it's 50-50, then he's maybe catcher two viable. But I think he loses all fantasy appeal while Sean Murphy's around. BP says, what's your rest of season outlook for Jordan Beck and Max Meyer? I have them both in an NL only.
In an NL only, like that's, I mean, those are good pieces to have. Beck was the first one, right?
Yes, Jordan Beck, yeah. Who had his bat speed decline.
Had his bat speed... Yeah, no, his bat speed rise, didn't it?
Oh, sorry, but his overall production has not been great, minus the 2 stolen bases.
Yeah, bat speed up for Jordan Beck, but a ton of Ks, but is running. It's too early to tell. I think as long as Jordan Beck's playing every day, I think he's going to be pretty valuable, at least power speed-wise, in NL only. Max Meyer, I'm trying to predict how long Max Meyer is going to go this season is an impossible thing to do, but I think Max Meyer, when we saw in the spring, what we've seen pedigree wise for Max Meyer, I think can be, I don't know, mid rotation type of guy. If things go well and he stays healthy. So we'll see there.
Yeah, no, I'm good with both. And it'll only, as Ryan said, and I think Jordan Beck will be okay as long as they continue to let him work through things.
Like that's the unknown. That's the unknown is what Colorado.
God forbid we let Nick Martini take a roster spot and ruin right. Like Zach Veen and Jordan Beck should play 162 games this year, but it's the Rockies. So that will not happen. But that'd be my thing there. And Max Meyer is fine as long as he stays on the field. Zero problems there at all. Last thing for Dr. Doom mentions what's wrong with Mason Wynn. I think it's a couple things. I saw something mentioned actually by one of the beat writers is, this offseason, they tried to change his approach to hit the ball like more on the ground and like totally messed with the swing. And he said he like over the week, like on Sunday, ditched it to get back to doing his normal swing. He was not comfortable. So we'll see. That could just be talk because he's trying to work through stuff. Who knows? I think he's also pressing personally. Like he played too well last year to be this bad.
Even I didn't think it'd be this bad to start out. It's a slump. I did not know that about the Cardinals. And I mean, didn't they try and do that with Jordan Walker a few years ago?
100%. Yep. They moved his stance around. They had him like change where like there's something about like his pelvis to help him, you know, stay on top of the ball more. It's like all this stuff with his whole swing. And he's like, yeah, that's not working for me right now.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, you just got to let talented young players do what they do best and leave them alone type thing. But
yeah, my follow-up, now that I'll be a listener here, my follow-up to Dr. Doom's question is, how are you feeling, Bubba, about your Bo Bichette versus Mason Wynn beer bet?
Bichette's looking good. I'll acknowledge it. Bichette's looking good right now. I'm still fine because last time I checked, they played, what, 5 games?
Yes. Correct answer. But still. Yeah. I had to, you know.
You saw me play blackjack. You think I'm worried about 5 games?
So, I was more focused on purpose playing blackjack just for my own safety, but yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, we're good. But all right, final thoughts, my friend, before we head out of here. We'll be back on Thursday with our Week 3 FAD preview.
Yeah, that's the routine. Every Tuesday will be Bloom Boards, usually one. Not gonna do Doble every week, but Bloom Boards Tuesdays, FAB on Thursdays. So let the routine begin, man.
Yeah, and keep your questions coming throughout the season if you guys will take time and get those answered for you whenever we can. So don't be shy about that at all. But if that's it, we will be back with you guys on Thursday with some FAB for you. Make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I am on Twitter at BDentric. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 230. Catch y'all next time.